This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we are doing Four Christmases, so if you haven't seen it, you have bounce house trauma, or you don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want us to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Bounce house trauma? Bounce house trauma?
Are you ready for
one?
Dry kiss, just like the ones I used to know.
Really quick before we jump in, the last episode that we had where I had to do the singing, I sounded very different in my head than how I did in the recording.
You haven't heard the Pottersville one. You sound great.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
We match really well. Yeah, I have no idea what was happening with that one. I was like...
Steel Magnolias.
That sounded very different when we recorded it. Like, to me, it sounded different too. I was like, Corinne, what are you doing? Jeez. Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, good. Because I'm like, I wonder if Corinne just has to deal with that with me all the time.
No,
like, I'm
singing,
singing like I think I know what I sound like. And you're just shaking your head going, I'm just going to humor this bitch.
We both thought we knew what we sounded like, and neither of us sounded like we thought. Yeah. No.
Thank the Lord.
Yes.
Well, with that, welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-com movies. Thank you for joining us today. We are going over not one, not two, not three, but four Christmases. And I am here with my co-host, the one I wouldn't mind spending four Christmases with, even though I haven't spent the last two, and she really, really wanted us to, and she's been giving me shit about it for the last half hour, Corinne Edding.
And I am here with Tamara Cosio, who I have invited to the last two Christmases specifically and has always been invited by default to all the previous ones, and she has never appeared. Miss Tamara Cosio, but I'm not bitter. I'm fine.
I'm going to say, I think we were still recording, and I'm going to go back and listen to it because I was deathly ill once.
Yeah, yeah.
And... like, literally was like, oh, my God, my flight's tomorrow, and I really don't think I should be going. Because I remember, like, your parents, your dad had to get, like, a surgery.
Yeah. And... my dad had double hip replacement surgery.
Yes.
No, that was not the time to go. You were so sick. You shouldn't have gone. And then the following time, your sister invited you, and so you spent it with your, like, literal family. So, you know, that's...
yes. But yeah. But still, I get poked. Still. To this day, Corinne's like, I've invited you to Christmas. What are you doing this Christmas? I don't want to invite you because you're probably not going to show up like you haven't the last 2 years. And I'm like, are you serious right now? Are you serious? No, she's not. But...
no, I just like to tease. And speaking of which, I don't know if it was the last episode or the episode before, I recall saying, you know, there has been a movie that you have picked that I have rated higher than you have. And you were like, I would like to see that, Missy. Well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I knew you were going to find it if it happened. I'll say next episode. I don't even have to do the research because all I have to say it. And I'm sure that Corinne will be like, as a matter of fact.
Well, actually. I was inspired because of this movie. And I thought about how you had chosen Just Like Heaven.
Oh, you rated that one higher than me?
You gave it 3 dry kisses and I gave it 3.5. Yes.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh. Wow. Banner day in ODK history. I deemed the movie mediocre and Corinne deemed the movie slightly less mediocre. That's yeah.
Hey, I think that 3 dry kisses is a good rating. It means, generally speaking, I enjoyed the movie. So, mm-hmm. You know, 3 dry kisses is like, hey, this is where you want to be at minimum, yeah. Right?
Yes. Yes. I could see that because somebody be like, oh, should I watch Just Like Heaven? And you'd be like, yeah. You kind of got that inflection where you're like, yeah, you should. It's not like, oh, no, go out, rent it right this minute. I'll come with you. Let's go watch it together.
No, 3 dry kisses, I'd be like, yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I would be like, yeah, if it's a 3 dry kiss movie, I will totally watch it and I will enjoy it. That's what it means.
Well, I think maybe our timing is a little bit off than the fact that we're explaining this now when we're already like 2 years in. Just saying.
If it's a two dry kiss movie, not so much.
Oh, and speaking of ratings.
Yes.
Today was an exciting day. Ooh. For both of us. Because we got our Spotify end of the year recaps. Beep, 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 beep. Not only for our podcast, but also personally. So I got a fucking banger playlist that was lovingly curated for me. And I'm very excited. And also we got a lot of useful information about all of our lovely new listeners out there. We love you. Thank you so much for hanging around with us. The only thing I do have to say is when it was going through our podcast ratings, it kept saying like, do you know what your most listened to episode was?
Yes. We were like, yes, we do.
Yeah. Yeah. The obsessed mess. What?
Yeah.
And then the next string would be like, can you guess what your most listened to episode is? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's got five times more than anything else. Like, that's, yeah. Out of these three, can you pick which one is your most? And I'm like, yes, sweet yes. Baby Jesus, I can't scroll fast. And I know, Spotify. Thank you.
Which episode was listened to 999% more than any other episode? Oh, geez, I wonder. Oh. Obsessed mess. Yes. Yeah. Yes, we get it. We get it.
Let me contemplate that for a hot second. Yeah. It just the fact that it came up on four screens simultaneously, yes. You know, I was like, oh, yeah, I know Spotify. And then I'm like, yeah, I know Spotify. And I'm like, all right, fucking I know Spotify. Stop rubbing it in. Yes, we have one episode that is leaps and bounds above the other ones. Hopefully one day it'll even out so they're all that high. But right now we are very well aware, yes. Very well aware.
We are grateful that it brought several listeners to us.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And we felt like it was what we needed to do in the moment, given what we had experienced. And also, yes, we are more than that episode.
Are we? Spotify doesn't seem to think so.
I did an episode on Obsessed Mess, and all I got was this crappy t-shirt.
And the Spotify playlist that keeps taunting me. Oh, Spotify, are you going to capture lightning in a bottle twice? Huh? Fuck you, Spotify.
No, we're not. It's not likely. Somebody was like, no. You know what you should do? You should go around to different conventions. I was like, no, we should not do that.
Just go like work some shit up and like cause problems and then run away and be like, you will never guess what happened at this fucking conference. Oh my God. Somebody shit in the girl's bathroom floor. Nobody cleaned it up.
It's like we bring like Kevin McAllister from Home Alone to create problems and ruckus all throughout the convention.
Oh yeah. And then report on it. Yes. That sounds like a great idea. I kind of have this dream, this banner dream that I have no time to do. I think I've said this before, like a small town mysteries, little things that don't hold a lot of weight. Like this one time when I used to drive from Hollywood to work, I would always get through this stretch of the Hollywood freeway and it would always smell like so strongly like powdered sugar. And I could not, by looking at all of those factories, and I even Google mapped it, figure out where that smell came from. So I'm like, I would just love to take a couple of weeks and like go fucking investigate. I think I did mention this because I think
yes,
I said it was probably
I remember
club.
It all now, yeah. Clearly.
Yeah.
And investigative reporter Tamara on the case while Corinne takes naps and occasionally pops up for commentary. I like it.
Yes. I'll even get a Scooby-Doo van so you can nap in the back. You don't even have to like be disturbed. I'll just...
Oh my God, will there be beanbag chairs back there? There's got to be beanbag chairs.
We can make that happen. It'll be like that movie Half Baked, where you're just the girl in the van, like they had a guy on the couch, and I'll just like poke you to come out and help me with my mysteries, and then you just go back and take another nap. So it'd be perfect. It'd be like my silent partner.
It'll be so perfect. No, I'm just going to be editing our other podcast while you do like the whole research and interviewing and stuff like that in the van. Yeah.
Speaking of recording things together, Corinne.
Yes.
Did you make a synopsis for Christmas?
No, you made a promise to me in the script, and I want you to follow through with it.
What promise?
Cookie.
No, that was for you. I wanted you to do it in a Cookie Monster voice.
No, you're supposed to read the prompt in a Cookie Monster voice.
Oh, no. I wrote that when I was high. I absolutely will not. I was just trying to make you laugh when I wrote it.
I'm disappointed now. I thought I was going to have a Cookie Monster prompt for it, but no. Okay, fine.
No, I can do it, but if it sucks, you're cutting it out.
I'm so excited!
And I wrote for Corinne,
C is for cookie, but not synopsis. Even though it sounds like it should start with C. Corinne with the C, can you also see? Also not spelled with the C, even though it's the literal sound. Curse this confusing English language. See it in your heart to enlighten us with the synopsis.
And then I wrote, dot, dot, dot. Sorry, I wrote this after getting high and think I am so funny. And right now, as I read it sober, I am not laughing.
No apologies necessary. You have utterly delighted me. Are you kidding me?
Oh my gosh.
This is the best ever. Thank you.
Why, yes, Cookie, I do have a synopsis for you.
So glad this podcast is hosted by five-year-olds.
Kate, played by Reese Witherspoon, and Brad, played by Vince Vaughn, are the perfect 30-something-year-old couple. They enjoy taking dance classes together, know how to keep their sex lives amped up, and are smart enough to avoid their very toxic families for the holidays. This Christmas, they're going to Fiji, or at least they thought they were, until San Francisco was fogged in and a roving news reporter decided to interview the couple live on TV. Now that their family knows that they're in town, Brad and Kate have agreed to go to 4 motherfucking Christmases. It would have been 2,
Yay.
But both of their parents are divorced with families of their own. Yay. Will Kate and Brad keep their relationship spicy and find a broom closet to do it in at one of their parents' house? Will the 4 families band together and do an intervention for the globetrotting couple? Or will they all take turns splashing mulled wine in each other's faces in dramatic soap opera fashion? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
Wow. Splashing mulled wine in each other's faces.
Uh-huh.
Quite a picture you paint there, Corinne. Does that ever actually happen? Does San Francisco get fogged in?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Like, I've never heard of it living in the Bay Area, although I was not an avid flyer between my ages of 0 and 16. So I just thought that was something they made up when I saw this movie. I'm like, oh, that makes sense, though, because it is very foggy.
Yeah.
And
yeah, sometimes that happens. Less so now, but yeah, sometimes that happens. So that would be the biggest reason why flights would be canceled is because of fog. In San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
So, Miss Tamara, are you ready to take us on the journey of not one, not two, but not three, but 4 Ba-ba-ba-bow, Christmases?
I know I shuddered a little bit when you did that because I was like going through my mind and imagining the 4 families that I'd have to go see in my own like world. And it wouldn't be as bad as Brad and Kate, but it would be a lot. It would be a lot. Love you, fam. We open in a busy, trendy bar. There are man buns and artisanal drinks everywhere.
Mm.
A petite blonde woman sits alone. She's sipping champagne. She's approached by a tall, bespectacled man. This is the second time that I've put bespectacled in the first paragraph of my fucking outline, Tamara. A man with glasses.
Good vocabulary. Don't hate.
Yes. He introduces himself as Kent. He asks her name and she tells him Daphne, and he awkwardly tries hitting on her, rambling about how Daphne's a pretty name. Reminds me of a flower. I really like your earrings. She begrudgingly tells him she's from Connecticut, and he gushes that he's a big fan of Connecticut and lists all the reasons why. Hot. Daphne seems extremely bored with the whole thing. She finally cuts him off saying, I'm going to stop you right there. On paper, you've done everything right. You've shown an interest in my history, complimented my accessories, blah, blah, blah. Hell, if we met in college, we might have started a relationship, which I would have ultimately regretted because I would have found out you were as boring and polite in the bedroom as you have been during this god-awful conversation. Mm. I want a man whose hand doesn't shake when he puts it up my shirt.
Oh, Well, then.
She gets up to leave amongst Kent's weak protests until she gets a few feet away, and mild-mannered Kent whips off his glasses and says loud enough for the whole bar to hear, "Bitch, I'm talking to you!" Daphne and everybody else stop dead in their tracks. Mm. Daphne confronts him, and as he tells her, "You talk the talk, you crazy little slut, but can you deliver the goodies?
Ew.
I don't give a damn about Connecticut, and I hate those cheap earrings." He gets uncomfortably close, leans in, saying, "I'm from North Dakota, and this is how we handle things in the Bison State, Mama," and kisses her hard on the mouth. She pulls away angrily, telling him to stop or she'll take him to his knees, and he whispers suggestively, "Promise," and they kiss again. This time it seems much more mutual. They ultimately take their makeout session to a unisex bathroom and hold up the line for a good while they get freaky in it.
Ooh.
Wasn't that a fucking, like, when I first watched this movie, I was like, what is happening?
I was like, it's like Kristen and Dean from By the Book.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was like, oh, I know what's happening here.
You just got that freakier side in me, Corinne. I am very chaste and very missionary. And you were like, furries. Real dolls. Getting freaky in bathrooms. Like, you know it. You are on it.
I'm like, oh, they're so role playing.
I did not get that.
Yeah. So when they emerge, they seem super coupley and in love. They catch a trolley because, ding, ding, San Francisco treat. And Kent stops traffic, telling the halted cars, "Stop, Angel Crossing, barf," as she giggles. They get to a very nice house, and Kent admires the view from the porch, asking, "So, this is where you live?" She smiles and says, "This is where you live too, honey," and unlocks the door. A little later, they are brushing their teeth on adjoining sinks and exchanging notes about their characters of the evening. Apparently, this little bar tryst is something they do often. And we learn that their real names are Kate, played by Reese Witherspoon, and Brad, played by Vince Vaughn. And role-playing is not the only thing they enjoy doing. No. You should see the shibari scene in this movie. It's impeccable.
You're so wrong. If I listened to this podcast and didn't know you better, I would be watching the movie going, "She says there's a shibari scene." Like, I don't know how they're going to work it in, if it's going to be like between the houses and the families, but that's just like what I'm waiting for.
There's no actual
shibari. And then not scene. To have it. No. And then being super disappointed and be like, maybe it's one of those things after the credits, like a little teaser.
We next see them cutting a rug at a ballroom dancing class. See, no shibari, just dancing. And shibari is Japanese rope play.
Bondage stuff.
Yeah. And it's really cool looking. Like, you look at the pictures and it's like super cool. It's not something that I think my body would tolerate at all, but it is pretty. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're cutting a rug at the dancing class. At the end, Brad is taking Kate's shoes off, rubbing her feet sensually and sweet-talking. The other two class couples notice the smitten pair and introduce themselves and ask, "When are you getting married?" Kate and Brad are taken aback. No, we're not getting married. "We just like doing stuff together, like ballroom dancing," one of the ladies asks incredulously. "Then why not get married then?" Kate and Brad go on a diatribe about how marriage puts unnecessary pressure on a relationship, Brad argues. "That's why they call it tying the knot, or the old ball and chain," Kate adds. "And have you ever listened to the words of a marriage ceremony? To obey and until death do you part?" You can have your own words to a marriage ceremony, Kate. It doesn't need to be that way. The engaged couple's faces fall as they contemplate Brad and Kate's words, and one lady pipes up, "But you do want kids, right?" And Kate and Brad emphatically shake their heads. No. Brad tells the group, "I don't want to make them or be responsible for the hurt and disappointment that they will ultimately experience." And by making, we assume Brad means having a baby versus the act of sex. Because that part's good.
Mm-hmm.
Kate adds, "We both come from divorced families," and Brad concludes, "so we don't need to repeat the pattern. But anyways, congratulations." The vibe in the room has definitely shifted. The couples look a little less sure about their situation as the non-newlyweds congratulate them and Brad assures them cheerfully, but to each their own.
Next, we see San Francisco decked out in all its lights and holiday regalia. Brad and Kate are at Brad's company party. A couple of his coworkers come over to meet Kate and start lamenting about their holiday plans. One has to spend it pretending his 3-year-old niece is the next Beyonce, and the other one gets to sleep on a musty couch in Albany with 7 cats.
Mm.
When asked about their plans, Brad and Kate admit that they're going on vacation to Fiji alone. Their coworkers are surprised that they're not choosing to spend time with their families. Not ridiculously surprised like the neighborhood was to the Cranks when they decided to skip Christmas, but an annoying amount.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you're not spending time with your family. If somebody said they're going to Fiji for a vacation during Christmas, I'd be like, that's fucking awesome.
Uh-huh. Same.
Brad and Kate explain that they've devised a workaround. If they tell their families that they're doing something charitable, like building houses in third world countries, teaching English as a second language in Puerto Rico, or teaching Chinese kids how to catch lobsters and boil the lobsters so they can ultimately eat the lobsters, Brad clarifies, the more details we give, the less questions they ask. One of his coworkers asks accusingly, don't you feel guilty lying to your families? To which Brad answers confidently, you can't spell families without lies.
Ugh.
And Kate adds, feel guilty for taking a vacation on our vacation? No, not really.
Seriously. There we go, Kate. Yeah. Feel guilty for taking a vacation on our vacation? Yes.
Yeah. You guys were just talking about how shitty your holidays are going to be, and then you're giving your coworkers shit for actually doing something that sounds like mildly enjoyable. That's when I was like, sometimes these Christmas movies, I'm like, all right, you're stretching it. Yes, you're surprised that they're doing it, but don't be like, how can you not want to spend the whole holiday with your family? Mind your business, Chuck. Mind your business. I don't know if that's your name, but that's what I'm calling you.
Wait. So I'm getting this whole other picture. Instead of like, you were like, I'm so sick. So but you're actually like in Hawaii or Cabo San Lucas. You're like probably at some like resort that had like, it was all drinks around the house, everything. You could have invited me, Tam. I'm just saying, you could have invited me. I would have gone.
That's 1,000% what happened. Yeah. I came back from my luxurious sunny holiday and you're like, all your Instagram posts show you like on a sandy beach in a bikini. And I'm like, oh, that was just a green screen on my phone. I was just doing one of those fun filters. Don't even worry about it. You heard how sick I got.
No, you were really sick. I was like, completely was like, please stay home. You are not feeling well.
I don't want people thinking I'm a jerk.
No, I just thought that was a funny flight of fancy. You actually going on like, you know, some resort and pretending that you were sick.
Who told you? How did you know?
Shh, secrets.
Mm. Back at home, they're playing backgammon and talking about their trip. They're oozing lovey-doveyness. Kate did an early check-in and booked a couples massage. Brad bought Kate the noise-canceling headphones she was hinting about. This seems like it's going to be a super relaxing chill time.
Yay!
The night before going to sleep, Kate is lying on Brad's chest and asks, doesn't it feel like we've been on this vacation before between Bali, then Costa Rica, and then... Brad assures her, no, this is different. It's Fiji. She agrees half-heartedly, but doesn't push the matter, and they go to sleep.
I'll take it. I'll take Bali. I'll take fucking Costa Rica. I'll take Fiji. I'll take it all.
Yeah, you've been to Costa Rica.
I have. It wasn't like a beach vacay, though. It was, you know, I took environmental biology. I lived with a host family. It wasn't sexy at all.
Oh, okay.
But it was interesting and it was cool. Like I'm not complaining about my trip, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm hanging out on a beach in a bikini, like with a drink or anything like that. Or I'm going on gliding tours through the rainforest. None of that was happening.
Mm-hmm. So. Just like you were inventing my vacation. I'm imagining that you're full of shit and it was really like a magical fucking glorious time and you're just downplaying it so I don't feel bad.
Yeah.
Because I've never been to Costa Rica.
I go hiking through the woods and stay in like some kind of a wooden cabin where I wore like lots of clothes to go to bed so I didn't get eaten by mosquitoes. That didn't happen at all.
But then Manuel showed up.
Oh, well. Hey, Manuel. Hola. ¿Qué tal? Por vida. That's what they say in Costa Rica. Oh, you already know that because you live here. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. So the next day, Brad and Kate wake up refreshed and excitedly packed for the trip. It's like a tampon commercial. They're flirtatiously throwing clothes at each other and kissing each other with their snorkel masks on. You know how most people pack, right?
Right. Yes. No.
No.
Again, I don't get out much. No.
I'm like, if somebody was doing that with me while I was trying to pack, I'd be like, leave me the fuck alone. I'm trying to figure out what to bring and what not. This is not the time to be flirtatious. We just need to get fucking packed so we can get out the door.
What if somebody put on their dating profile that they had like everything lined up, exactly your perfect guy, but one of their requirements was must be a boisterous, sexy packer?
You know what? If they were perfect in every other way, I would I would boisterously, sexily pack. But I would make sure I was prepared with a list so I could check things off like low-key while the boisterous, sexy packing was being done. I'm like, ha, 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 fling, quick, look at the list, look at the list.
Yes, God forbid you guys make out on top of your suitcases, but you wind up in Costa Rica with only two pairs of underwear because you fucking forgot to pack more.
Exactly. Yes, there would be some serious checklisting going on. I would just be very prepared. While they're packing, they call their respective families and tell them the bad news that they'll be doing charitable work out of the country and won't be making it home. On the way to the airport, as they puzzlingly drive over a bridge to get to the San Francisco airport from San Francisco, ?
It's like everybody thinks that if you go anywhere in San Francisco, you have to go across the Golden Gate Bridge. No, no. Golden Gate Bridge takes you out of San Francisco. Yeah. And they were very inside San Francisco at the beginning of the movie. So there is no reason or way they'd be going across that bridge unless they were very lost.
Yes. They wanted to take the Marin Airport or bus from Marin back into San Francisco to get into SFO. No. It is a very good deal, though. But that is not the case. Anywho, questionable videography aside, an ominous fog begins rolling in. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, Carl, why you gotta ruin everything? You know that the in San Francisco, the fog has a name. Its name is Carl. I'm serious.
Why do they call the fog Carl?
What? I don't know why they call fog Carl. That's the name. That's the name of Carl is the name of San Francisco's fog.
See, there has to be an origin story. This sounds like a job for small town detectives to figure out why the fuck San Franciscans call their fog Carl. Another episode right there.
All right. That you heard it here. Tamara's small town detective minisode will be coming out while we find out who Carl is in the fog in San Francisco. Why he's named that way. And why is the fog a man? We don't know. But Tamara will.
While Corinne's sleeping in the van.
Yes. So, by the time they reach the departing terminal, all flights have been canceled due to the fog. The very suntanned clerk at the Fiji Island Airways desk tells the two that he can put them on standby for the first flight out tomorrow. When Brad argues, that's not going to work. They have a couple's massage scheduled, for God's sake. The clerk cuts him off, saying, I'm sorry, sir. I don't make the fog. I just deal with it. This puts Brad on edge, and he starts getting snarky because he wasn't snarky before. He was totally snarky before. With the employee, before Kate interjects, she nicely asks, is there a sister airline that could possibly fly us out that you can talk to? The clerk shakes his head no. And Brad, who's still incensed, asks, how about a cousin airline or an airline that yours has felt up before? Kissing cousins, perhaps. And apparently, they're not super resourceful because there's an Oakland International Airport right across the bridge from them. And if that's too foggy, which it shouldn't be, there's the San Jose International Airport, which will definitely not be too foggy.
Yeah.
Just south of them. They may need to buy new tickets, but with their disposable income, they can just do that.
No, Corinne.
Yes.
They don't leave San Francisco unless they're flying out or going across the Golden Gate Bridge inexplicably.
Or they have four Christmases to attend. Yes.
Right. We haven't got there yet, yeah. though. We haven't got there.
Because why would anyone want to leave San Francisco? Once you're in San Francisco, you can never leave again.
And if you try, Carl has something to say about it.
Carl will fuck up your shit if you try. Mm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just then, their conversation is interrupted by local news reporter live on site to capture all the grounded flights. She approaches Brad and Kate, still at the counter, and asks, "Excuse me, sir, where are you headed for this Christmas?" She holds out her mic to the dumbstruck duo. When they don't answer, she hisses, "We are live!" After a pregnant pause, Brad starts mumbling, "We take the, and then we take the trip, and then we take a different trip." Kate jumps in and interprets. What he's trying to say is that we plan a trip every year, and this is just ruining our Christmas. The reporter responds, "You must be very disappointed. Are you two visiting family?" But we don't get an answer because we cut to Kate answering her phone. Her family saw the news report and are peppering her with questions about her plans now that their flight's canceled.
That's Carl laughing maniacally.
Seriously. Just then, Brad's phone rings and he asks a distracted Kate, "It's my dad. What do I do? What do I do? Do I pick up?" She waves him away, very clearly being like, "No, don't do it." Shaking her head, waving her hand across, like in the cut position. And he's like, "I don't understand what you're doing. I don't understand." Because Brad, I'm gonna fill you in, gentle listeners, on a secret about Brad. It's a deep, dark secret. He's a big baby man. He has the inability to make decisions for himself or also just actually act with any kind of autonomy whatsoever. Does this change throughout the course of the movie? No, not really. So Brad's confused. He doesn't know what to do about his cellular phone ringing. She waves him away, which makes him more frantic. "Yes or no? I don't know what the hand waving means." But he did answer. And when everything's said and done, the couple have talked to their respective families and reluctantly agreed to four Christmases together, one with each of their divorced parents. However, I have to point out that fucking Brad blames her for accepting Christmas invites from her family, but takes absolutely no responsibility for the Christmas invites that he does for his family.
That tracks. You know, I've noticed something. Just like Dolly Parton, Vince Vaughn basically plays the same character in most movies. And in a lot of the movies, he's kind of an asshole.
Yeah. Absolutely agree. Hard agree. Yes.
And I call this next section House One, a.k.a. UFC, NRA, and PTSD. Cut to Brad and Kate. In the car, driving, pissed off at their circumstances and each other, they're going north. Their colorful vacation clothes have been replaced with somber black outfits, and after a while, Kate asks for a truce, and they quickly kiss and make up, because they never usually fight. Kate points out, "This is what our families do. This is what happens. My mother makes me crazy." Brad agrees and says, "We just have to get through these Christmases as quickly and painlessly as possible." Kate nods and asks seriously, "Promise me we'll still have each other at the end of this." Brad agrees, although he's a little surprised by the statement. Eventually, they pull up to a rural dirt road in front of a two-story house with an American flag flying out front and possibly a "Don't Tread on Me" one, but I couldn't really tell.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I wouldn't either, but I didn't want to say it if it wasn't there. But I was like, that looks like a "Don't Tread on Me" flag. Before going in, Brad proposes that they come up with a safe word for the day in case things get too heavy. They agree on mistletoe, and Brad seems very, very reluctant to go inside, but they ultimately do. And we find out that their first Christmas is with Howard, Brad's dad, played by Robert Duvall. He welcomes the quote-unquote TV stars inside, and the house is full of wood paneling, hunting trophies, taxidermy animals, and an old black and white TV that's so old I don't even think it would work with a remote control, but I could be wrong. Howard, the dad, leads them in, complaining that all their presents seem a bit uppity, that they're trying to outdo everyone. And out of nowhere, Brad gets attacked from behind by his burly brother, who briefly puts Brad in a chokehold despite his protest, and is released, only to be greeted by his less burly brother, who reaches out to shake his hand, as a decoy and instead grabs Brad's arm and puts him in a reverse Nelson. Ugh. Then inexplicably stops and flops onto the couch smiling. Brad breathlessly introduces his brothers, Burly Denver, played by John Favreau, and Les Burly Dallas, played by Tim McGraw. Dallas shakes a slightly apprehensive Kate's hand and states, "You must be Orlando's girl." Kate is confused and asks, "Orlando?" And Denver responds, "Yeah, we were all named after the places we were conceived. Dallas, Denver, and Orlando." Kate doesn't have time to process this because Denver's wife, Susan, played by Katie Mixon.
Yay!
I know, I love her.
She is like the highlight of this movie for me.
Yes, and she was on that sitcom, American Housewife.
Oh, yeah, I didn't recognize her. Her hair's so different in American Housewife. She's less tan.
Yeah, Larry was watching it, and I was like, "Oh, this is a cool sitcom." And so we're just sitting there watching it for a little while, and he's like, "I like her plaid shirt." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And he's like, "If you want to dress like that, that's fine. I like that." And I was like, "Okay." He's like, "I really like Katie Mixon." I'm like, "Okay, Larry, I got it. Like, that is like that's your ideal girl."
Okay, so he wants you to dress like a mom. Great. Yay.
I don't think it was the mom. I think it was the plaid. Is the plaid that did it for him. Katie Mixon in plaid did it for him, actually.
Uh-huh. All right.
Susan, played by Katie Mixon, emerges from the kitchen with a baby on her hip, offering beer mimosas and spray cheese and crackers.
Yay!
Brad Lando haughtily teases that the cheese is from the aerosol cheese family, which causes Dallas to pounce on him again for making fun of his wife's snacks. He pins Brad to the ground and gently hums his head while holding his arm in an arm bar.
Yay! I was like, when this happened, because of the way he was joking about it, it was like really kind of in a condescending sort of tone.
Yeah.
And I was like, when first Dallas knocks him in the chest, like knocking mm-hmm. the wind out of him, and I was like, "Woo! Yeah, you go!" Because he was being an asshole. So I'm like, this woman is offering you snacks out of the kindness of her heart, trying to like do something that's like fancy and nice, and you're being an asshole about it. So yeah, you go ahead and get like knocked your ass onto the ground. That's like the first and only time that I'm okay with what happens to Brad Lando.
I was going to say, spray cheese is delicious. Aerosol cheese is tasty. Not like the other shit she makes later, but I'm going to leave that.
Oh, yeah, but nobody had to eat that, thank God. No. I mean, well, Kate and Brad Lando did not have to eat that. So, that would have been getting some paper towels and hiding some food, yes. So, we cut to Kate and Brad Brad Lando in a bedroom, taking off their coats and freshening up. Brad Lando apologizes for the spectacle that is his.
Oh, see, do you know what I did, Corinne? I realized that and I didn't even realize I did it. It's like, when I call him Brad Lando, it's because he kind of reverts back to who he was as a kid. But when it's just him and Kate, he's back to Brad. He's like the cool Brad, like, kind of like...
Is he though? Is he really cool?
No, he's not. But when I did that, I'm like, why do I just say Brad Lando? And then I say Brad, and I'm like, it's kind of like I call him Brad Lando when he gets cut down by his family and he kind of gets knocked down a couple of steps where he's like, I'm reverting back to my childhood self. And then when he's Brad, he's like, oh, I'm a successful businessman from San Francisco that's going to make fun of your cheese.
That lies about like what's going on in his life. Yes. Okay. So Brad, can't understand why.
You can do it however you want. But when I realized I did that inadvertently, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's my excuse. And I'm sticking to it.
I think it's a legitimate excuse. I just told Brad in disdain. So Kate is more concerned about the fact that Brad did not tell her his real name was Orlando. And I don't know if this was before Orlando Bloom was popular or not. But Brad can't understand why, because he never liked his name and said, if your name was Asshole and you changed it to Bob, you wouldn't say, my name used to be an asshole. You'd say, my name is Bob. But Kate retorts, maybe to a stranger on the street, but we've been together for 3 years. Brad reminds her, this is what I was afraid of would happen when we came here. We're letting them in and now we're fighting. Kate sighs, starting to agree, but gets in one more jab. Well, your middle name is an asshole, is it? Because I wouldn't want to be blindsided, Brad argues. Really? I have to take it from those Neanderthals out there, and now I gotta take it from you. Kate encourages him, you shouldn't let them pick on you. You're twice their size. Brad informs her, and it's true, he is much taller than his UFC brothers. Brad informs her that his brothers are semi-professional cage fighters and he doesn't stand a chance. Well, not professional, but backyard brawlers, which probs makes them more dangerous. They fight at any opportunity in people's backyards and then upload the footage to YouTube. Kate reminds him, you are large, confident, successful man, and your brothers are just intimidated by you. Plus, I thought you told me that your brothers were personal trainers. So see, he's like, he's just like fucking lying about his life, his extended family. Like, I'm like, what does Larry do? And you're all, oh, Larry works in an office. But what you mean is he paints offices, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with him painting offices, but he does not work in an office, even though technically he would be painting the offices, therefore working in them. And it's just like, come on. It's okay for people to be themselves and do their jobs.
Not to Brad, first of all. And second of all, maybe that scene at the beginning, like he is a compulsive liar and he doesn't want to do it for the sexual role play, but he has to like just spout out a few lies every couple of weeks just to like get it out of his system.
I wonder what he says about his dad. Ooh, how can you explain away him?
Ooh.
Robert Duvall does an excellent job as an asshole in this movie.
Oh, he does. He's an old curmudgeon that reminds me of a lot of people in my family.
There's a knock on the bedroom door interrupting their conversation, and his dad hollers, hey, it's time to open presents. And Kate looks at Brad Lando. That's according to Tamara. And tells him, now's your chance to set some healthy boundaries. And I say, no, motherfucker, if your brothers are physically fighting with you, the only boundary you set is not going to visit your toxic family. However, because Kate encourages Brad Lando to go out there and set some boundaries, filling his head with such gems as, they're intimidated by you, demand their respect. He does. And he looks like a royal ass, very confidently telling his brothers about the boundaries he's enforcing and how they're no longer allowed to treat him the way they do since they're grown up. Everyone quietly takes in his words. But do they?
At first. At first they do. But then, once his speech concludes, the brothers wait barely a second before tag-teaming Brad Lando. Denver kicks him onto the floor. Dallas drags him screaming down two living room stairs where he tags Denver in, who catapults off a dresser and backflip pins Brad Lando. Daddy Howard seems tickled at the abuse. Susan seems titillated. Kate is appalled, and two boys of about 8 and 10 years old barrel downstairs and want in on the beatdown.
Mm-hmm.
They plead with Denver, tap us in! Come on, tap us in! But Denver protests because he might lose custody again. But he finally caves, saying, what the hell, it's Christmas, and slaps both boys' hands, who then go apeshit on their uncle. But only for a few seconds before Grandpa Howard intervenes and reminds them, hey, hey, ho, 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 it's present time. They disperse, and Brad Lando jerkily pulls himself off the floor. He grabs a present for his older nephew while telling him, I hope you feel bad when you see what Uncle Brad got you. On the couch, Susan whispers to Kate, wasn't it so hard finding gifts under the $10 spending cap? Kate panics and tries to warn Brad. Brad! But she's too late. He gives Connor a box to unwrap, which is an Xbox game station. Connor is thrilled, and less burly brother Denver asks, how the hell did you find an Xbox for under $10? Burly Dallas adds, seems like somebody's showing off how much money he makes. Brad realizes his mistake and admits bitterly that he didn't know, prompting his dad to retort, well, maybe if you come home more often, you would. In an effort to deflect, Brad grabs a smaller gift for his younger nephew Cody to open from his dad. Cody does, and is super disappointed to find a flashlight, although it did have batteries, and cries, a flashlight? That's it? Why don't you love me, Dad?
Dad could have done better. You can still do better under $10 than a flashlight.
That just might have been a shitty... I mean, okay, say the kids went camping in their backyard a lot and they always like put a tent out in their yard. And he was always like, well, I wish I had a flashlight to take out there with me and blah, blah, blah. But if you do it next to an Xbox, like you don't know the story behind the flashlight. It might be a perfectly good gift, but you don't open up a flashlight after an Xbox. That's all I'm saying.
One, you put a note with context for a gift like that. Two, that was not a cute flashlight. He could have had a themed flashlight. It could have been like a Darth Vader flashlight. It could have been, you know, like you could, there are ways to give sensible gifts that are cute, that are fun, that are under $10.
Repeat after me. Cody is not Corinne. Just because you want a cute themed flashlight doesn't mean that Cody doesn't want a sensible one. You don't know Cody.
Oh, I do know Cody. He would not have been as upset if he had had like a Star Wars lightsaber fucking flashlight as opposed to the one that like his dad picked up at the gas station on his way home from work.
Anyway. Denver looks at his brother with a mixture of daggers and heartbreak as his son continues bitterly, well, my gift from Santa better be straight cool. Brad, not reading the room, picks up another present and says, well, I'm going to guess it's going to be around $10.
Brad's an asshole.
Cody asks, why? Is Santa cheap like my dad? And Brad says nonchalantly, no, Santa is your dad.
Ugh.
The two boys' faces fall. And Brad slowly realizes what he's done. Cody asks sadly, there's no Santa Claus? Brad responds, come on, don't tell me you didn't know that. Denver angrily says, they do now.
Ugh.
Cody starts inexplicably stripping to his underwear. And Susan quietly informs Kate, when Cody can't express his feelings real good, he takes to streaking.
Mm-hmm.
Cody yells, not even Santa loves me, as he launches himself out the window.
Oh, Brad. Fucking Brad Lando. Asshole. Jesus Christ. Dad Howard, unmoved by recent events, gets up from his recliner and says, okay, for what? No. Okay, anyways, I'm going to carry on. Gets up from his recliner and says, let's keep this moving. I'm starting to lose my buzz because you know what's required for opening presents? A nice party beer buzz.
At least in my house it is.
Real sympathetic, Grandpa, real sympathetic. He beelines it over to his presents, which is the biggest one, and tears it open. It's a satellite dish, and Howard immediately grumbles, how much is this satellite going to cost me? Brad corrects him, it's a satellite dish, and after giving Kate a confirming look, adds, nothing, we're paying for the service, and the man will be here to install it next week. Howard will have none of it. And thinks his son is looking down on him because he drives a combine. He tells the boys, top side in five, because things in this house get installed by guys in this house, not pedophiles who are going to go through the house and smell his underwear. I'm like, honey, you are not pedophile age. You are a senior citizen.
And I wouldn't want to smell your underwear, especially after I met you.
No, yeah. I'm not interested in getting anywhere near his underwear. Mm-mm. Before Brad Lando goes up to the roof, his brother, Dallas, hands him his baby and directs, give her to my wife. I got to go make grumpy. That's what Tamara is now going to refer to her pre-podcast poop as, a grumpy.
Yes, yes, I am.
Brad reluctantly obliges and Kate catches a glimpse of him holding the baby in the living room and things slow down and you practically hear like fantasy music playing because suddenly you get the inkling that Kate actually might want a little something something baby.
Really? You heard that? I heard.
Oh, ticking time clock. Clock a ticking. Ring ring, is somebody home? There's a baby knocking at your abdomen wall. Oh yeah, I did say that. So Brad passes the baby to Susan, who's in the kitchen with Kate, because ladies belong in the kitchen, am I right?
At that house they are.
And then Brad heads to the roof. But the guys are having technical difficulties installing the satellite dish for a few reasons. One, none of them have ever installed a satellite dish. Two, Brad's brothers continually torment and criticize him. And three, Brad's slightly inebriated dad is bellyaching about his common horror of an ex-wife who abandoned her career and family to run off with another man. Brad Lando reminds his father that Mom was a cashier. And then he says, not exactly a career. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Can we just make money? Like, do we need to be classist about how we make money?
And I wouldn't call myself of having a career when I was in retail. So I get that. Like, it's not, it's a job. I would call it a job, not a career per se.
You were a manager. You had a career.
Well paying one.
Paid better than some people's work.
Yeah.
And cashier is a union job if you're working at a grocery store, so.
I was going to say, I'm like, if you work at a grocery store.
Yeah. Anyways, Mom left because you completely shut her out and lied to her. And then we get our favorite repeating line of the film. Howard retorts, I fed her, I put a roof over her head, hell, I spoiled her. And let that be a lesson to y'all about being honest with your wives. You can't spell family without lies. And, which, reminiscent of the Christmas party. And also, from the relationship that I saw between Denver and Susan, I was like, they actually seem pretty cool with each other. Like, they seem to have a good thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think their relationship is actually pretty good. So, mm-hmm. Fuck off, Dad.
Yep.
Brad hears this, though, and a glimmer of recognition flashes across his face.
And since Dad is done teaching his sons the gospel of you can't spell families without lies. He heads back down to the living room to check the status of the picture. There's nothing on the TV but static, so he starts screaming loudly as the TV's picture goes from horrible to more horrible. Meanwhile, in the kitchen, Susan's in the middle of giving Kate the lowdown on motherhood. Kate, clueless around all things children, asks, how old's your baby? 2 or 3 months? Susan informs her, she's 9 months. Kate looks confused and asks, and she isn't walking or taking care of herself yet?
Oof.
Susan scoffs. I'm lucky if I can get a few minutes without my boob in her mouth to shower. Kate cringes a little, asking, does that hurt? And Susan shakes her head. Breastfeeding? No. I mean, it hurts at first, but then your nipples toughen up and you can't hardly feel a thing. Look here, you want to flick mine? Kate declines and Susan holds her daughter out and asks, okay, well, will you hold her? I got to put another layer on. And by layer, she means a layer. On the Spam, mayo, and Dorito casserole that she's making. And it looks like it's 75% mayo.
Well, yeah, I know. I could get behind the Spam. I could get behind Doritos with the Spam. You add the mayonnaise and you lose me. You lose me right quick.
You know, it might be one of those things that looks disgusting but tastes delicious.
Okay, you go ahead and... and have that popcorn salad of a fiasco of...
No. I'm just trying to give Susan the benefit of the doubt. I don't want to be a Brad, like, shitting on her spray cheese. So I'm just going to be like, it looks disgusting, but I will try it. For you, Susan, I will try it.
For Susan, I would totally try it. She's a total down bitch, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kate takes the baby, which immediately starts wailing in her arms. And then... chaos ensues. Back on the roof, Denver and Dallas harass Brad so much that he loses his balance and slides halfway down the roof. The satellite dish he's holding stops his fall, but pulls out almost every rivet that's holding the TV in the living room. The untethered cord knocks photos and shelves off the wall and causes Howard to go ballistic and scream, "You idiot! You're destroying everything! I could do better with my rabbit ears!" But the commotion also makes the baby stop screaming, and Kate is thrilled until the last rivet finally gives, causing the black and white TV set to catapult across the room, smash against a wall, and burst into flames. The cord unfurls, causing Brad up above to fall the remainder of the 2 stories onto the front yard. Kate flinches from the noise so hard that she bangs the baby's head against a cabinet door. The baby starts wailing even louder, and Susan hisses, "Give me back my baby!"
I don't blame her.
Brad.
Also, one of the brothers says to fucking Brad Lando, it's a satellite dish, so it should probably be pointed towards the sky. But Brad Lando ignores him and keeps on pointing it down towards, like, the fucking ground.
I've seen people do satellite dishes, and I almost feel like it's, they do have to line it up, yes, but they also have to, like, put in a code or some sort of, like, access. And so they wouldn't have been able to put that shit up themselves, I don't think.
No.
Brad, outside, in the front yard, wheezes, "Mistletoe! Mistletoe!" From a flattened bush that has broken his fall. The couple drives off, their visit concluded. Brad is surprisingly okay. He's snickering about Kate banging the baby's head and does not want to know what happens with your nipples when you breastfeed, even though Kate graciously offers to tell him. And they seem to have weathered the first Christmas pretty well.
Oh, yeah, pretty well. No, they did not. That was unacceptable on so many levels. Brad Lando proved himself to be an elitist dick, and the rest of the family was literally abusive and dismissive towards him. They 100% should have bailed after Brad Lando put down his boundaries and got the shit kicked out of him by his two brothers and two nephews. How? How did that go well? Please explain.
For their relationship. Their relationship was still intact when they left the house. Because even all that shit, they were still, like, laughing and joking and, like, God, that sucked, but we got through it type of attitude.
All right. Well, me and my sister used to have a safe word, tortilla, with each other for if we needed to get out of situations. I don't know what you and your sister had, but maybe we should actually choose a safe word, but we can't say it on the podcast because then people would know. But I will tell you, gentle listeners, it will not be tortilla.
I did. Me and my sister, if things were going south, I would say, fuck this shit, we're out.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what I would have said after he got the shit kicked out of him with the two brothers and the two nephews.
Mm-hmm.
We're leaving the expensive presents behind and we're getting the fuck out of Dodge.
I don't know if I would be as quick to exit, because I do recall we did have a holiday gathering at one point or another somewhere in Fresno, I do believe, and I recall my cousin Loopy teaching other people Muay Thai moves in the street. So okay. He wasn't attacking him, they weren't fighting, but still,
yes, like, that's consensual,
right. But that's like kind of like if I start at that base level, then maybe I'd have more tolerance for blatant beatdowns.
I mean, you have had more instances of arguments and stuff. Like,
what the fuckery with family? Yes. Yeah. Yes, I have.
There aren't really arguments when my family gets together.
No.
Nobody's drinking.
No.
Yeah. So there's no alcohol usually, or if there is, it's very light. And also, nobody's getting into fights. Nobody's getting into physical fights. Nobody's getting into verbal fights. We're all...
Oh, it might be your mother telling your dad to stop doing that because you just have surgery. Joe, you cannot be doing that, your doctor said over and over again, but he doesn't listen. That's like the extent of a fight in your family.
Yeah. Just trying to look out for the man.
Ugh. Oh, you just got a pacemaker? Stop reaching for that, Joe. Put that down, Joe. You cannot drive, Joe.
You are not supposed to pick up things that are 5 pounds or heavier, so put the pressure cookers down, Joe. My dad has like 4 different pressure cookers. I can't even. I'm Dad.
Does he need to get rid of one? Because I need one and I don't think he needs 4. I wouldn't ask if he had 2. Might not even ask if he had 3. But if he has 4.
I'll check. Although I do, you know, I lent my Instant Pot to him because it's much lighter than a pressure cooker. It's easier to take care of. So that he could pressure cook and my mom wouldn't have to try and negotiate lifting a heavy ass pressure cooker
Okay. See, what you have to do then is you have to give him your Instapot, but then say, oh, but I need a pressure cooker in place because I might want to use it, you know, in the meantime. And then you get the pressure cooker to your house and then I'll come over and I will take said pressure cooker and bring it back home with me. And then when your dad asks for it back and be like, what pressure cooker? I don't know what you're talking about.
Or I could get you an Instant Pot for Christmas.
It's a lot less fun that way, but sure.
I mean, I'm sorry. Dad, what pressure cooker? I don't know what you're talking about. There you go.
Also trying to help your parents declutter their house by taking a already existing pressure cooker off of their hands, because I know that they don't mind giving away stuff if it's going to a good home. And that's true. I will give that pressure cooker a good home. I sure will.
I will let my dad know. And now we go to house number two, the Cougar Den. Rawr. A little later, they arrive at Kate's mother's home. It's a two-story house in nicer, less rural area. All of this is in the Marin area, so that's all fucking expensive as hell. Even Mr. Combine, like, white trash, who has the two-story house, you know, it's going to just be destroyed when that land gets sold. But it's still, like, he's got $1 million-plus property right there. So
if it's in northern, like, the Bay Area, yes. If it's down here, like, it almost looked to me like the outskirts of L.A. once you go up the Grapevine, because you could see in the outside scene when on the roof, a freeway off in the distance. And I'm like, oh, that looks like Lancaster, where houses are still reasonably affordable because it's in the middle of a fucking desert. And he was, like, on a big plot of dirt. Just dirt. Flags and dirt.
Yes, flags and dirt. And that's going to be our next country song that we perform for you tonight. Flags and dirt. A little later, they arrive at Kate's mother's home. It's a two-story house in a nicer, less rural area. It's tasteful, except for the full-size Buddy Christ Jesus statue in the front yard. Kate says quietly, that's new. They are greeted at the door by Kate's mother, Marilyn, played by Mary Steenburgen. Yay, we love Mary Steenburgen! She gives Kate a quick, stiff hug, then beckons to Brad enthusiastically. Come here, you big cuddly teddy bear. Then mashes her body against him, lingers a bit, and whispers, that feels good. A few other ladies come to the entryway and all fawn over Brad and how tall he is, completely ignoring Kate. Kate introduces her two aunts and her gram-gram, who has latched onto Brad's belt and winks at him when he asks her nicely to let it go. He is, like, literally being non-consensually, like, touched and molested by these women, which is why, yes, Tamara calls it Cougar House, which is a cute way of saying they're violating him.
But he's so tall. We didn't mention it at the top of the show, but Brad is tall. Like, Vince Vaughn is in real life, like, 6'4", I think.
Yeah.
And Reese Witherspoon is 5'2", I want to say. So there is well over a foot between them in height. And if you look on the Four Christmases movie poster, you can see them standing back to back. But Reese Witherspoon is standing on a stack of presents, so they're at the same height.
She knows how to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
The family convenes to the den where Kate's sister Courtney, played by Kristen Chenoweth.
Oh, I didn't put that. I didn't put Kristen Chenoweth. How dare I? Two times I missed ladies in the movie that I very well should have addressed.
Mm-hmm, because she is a legend in, like, an amazing way. Yes. She greets Kate slightly warmer than her mother, but says, I'm sorry, I can't get up because the baby is gassy. If I stop bouncing him, until she sees Brad. Then she shoots off the couch and shakes his hand, making sure her infant does not obstruct the view of her very low-cut shirt. Kate is appalled by the obvious difference in attention they're getting, but says nothing. Courtney hands the baby to her husband, who is immersed in a video game, telling her sister, can you believe we're trying for another? Oh, wait, I forgot. You're too cool for kids. Kate objects. I never said I'm too cool. Then she thinks better of it and stops. You know what? I'm not getting into this. Kate changes the subject, asking, where's Cassie, her niece? And Courtney says solemnly, she's out in the jump. Kate freezes. Wait. And asks quietly, there's a jump? Brad registers the absolute terror on his girlfriend's face and asks, what's the deal with the jump, aka bounce house? Courtney and Marilyn almost giddily explain that Kate got trapped in a jump in the fifth grade and was tormented for an hour by the neighborhood kids. While Kate tries to interrupt the real fun story, Brad's confused and asks, why would they torment her? And Courtney snickers and says, it's because she was Cootie Kate. Kate gives her sister the stink eye, but her sister plows on. You couldn't touch her because she had cooties, and if you got them, you'd have to wipe them off and spray yourself with disinfectant. Brad said, that must have been real traumatic. How long did that go on for? Kate responds, not long. And Courtney corrects, about 7 years, K through sixth grade. Marilyn and Courtney laugh at this memory while Kate looks like she wants to spit nails, and I feel so bad for Kate. This whole section made me so sad. Mm. They are so mean and dismissive towards her. It hurts my soul. As a girl who has had cooties bestowed upon her and been ostracized by social groups, I'm like, I watch this whole thing and I'm all, ah, excuse me while I go rock in the corner. Thank you very much.
I don't pick a movie unless I know it's going to make Corinne rock in the corner at some point. So mission accomplished, Tamara. Good job.
Hey, this is technically a rom-com.
Technically. And it's full on about Christmas because it's called Four Christmases.
Not I know.
One, not two, not three, but four.
I'll watch Steel Magnolias again. Thank you very much. Oh, we're not doing Steel Magnolias again this week? I thought we were doing a deeper dive.
Then Marilyn leads the family in sharing the spiritual gifts they're giving this year instead of physical gifts due to Pastor Phil's urging. And much to little Cassie's dismay, that poor girl's like, we're not doing real presents? Mm-hmm. Seriously? No, no, Kate asks Courtney, who's Pastor Phil? And her sister tells her, Mom's new beau. All the spiritual gifts the ladies in Kate's house want to give are predominantly sexual in nature. Surprise, surprise. Except Courtney, who will gift herself with a scheduled C-section for her next baby. Her current baby is about 3 months old, and she passes him off to Kate so she can fix herself. Kate, who seems to be notoriously bad with kids, gets almost immediately projectile vomited on. And Brad immediately starts dry heaving. Mm. He can't handle vomit and orders Kate away or he's going to throw up too. She goes to the restaurant to clean up while Brad gets surrounded on the couch by Marilyn and her sister. They practically curl around him and feed him cookies, causing him to joke, I feel like I'm in a harem. They gush about how Kate should have brought him by earlier. He's the longest relationship that she's ever had with a male. He asks, a male? Which prompts the ladies to bust out the photo album because they have a whole slew of other fun Kate stories and pictures in their arsenal to share. Kate was an abnormally large toddler, and her family, along with Brad, fat shame her baby pictures. Yeah. And then her childhood pictures because they had to send her to fat camp. They tease her pre-adolescent pictures. Brad says, she looks like a boy named Bjorn. Yeah. And they show him, finally, Kate's best friend, Josephine, who everyone called Joe. Joe's on the masculine side, and Courtney remarks that she coaches women's wrestling now. There are several photos of Kate and Joe, and the posing and expressions between them may lead one to believe that there was something more going on.
Oh, let's lesbian shame her as well while we're at it. That's great. I also had that happen to me, too. Good times. I want to pull Kate aside at this point in time. When she gets barfed on by the child and her boyfriend doesn't say, oh, let me run and get you some towels. And instead it's just like, I can't handle this. I can't handle this. I want to say, Kate, beware of baby man. Beware of baby man. He's not the man who can do anything for himself. Beware of baby man. Yeah. Mm. And there's nothing I love more than some fat shaming and some lesbian accusing. However, thankfully, Kate was not there to hear the abuse. She's in the restroom cleaning up, but there's so much vomit on her dress, she begrudgingly is forced to change into some of her old clothes, which are so 90s. Acid wash jeans, a purple Cosby sweater, and white high-top Reeboks. While she's in the restroom, she notices Courtney's diaper bag and starts rooting around in it. She gives the aspirator a few test squeezes. Don't do it, girl. You don't know the unspeakable things that have happened to that. Speaking of dry heaving, She plays around with the breast pump, almost latching it onto her boob, but she has a layer of cloth in between, so fortunately that doesn't happen, and then finds an industrial-sized box of pregnancy tests. Her curiosity gets the best of her, and she takes one and pees on it. She's still on the toilet when her niece... Oh, by the way, if you're trying to get pregnant, the best places to get pregnancy tests, from what I've heard, is the Dollar Tree store. So
That's where my sister got hers. She got all her pregnancy tests from the Dollar Tree store. Yeah. She's like, I have to take them a lot, so why am I going to spend $17 for one when I can just go get one for a dollar?
Exactly. She's still on the toilet when her niece Cassie barges in asking, what are you doing? Because little kids do that. They just go into the bathroom when you're there. It is their way. Cassie sees the pregnancy test and snatches it up, asking, what's this? Kate lies, that's my special magic marker, causing Cassie to, ooh. What does Cassie do? Does she try to draw on the walls with the really light-colored yellow marker? Does Kate try and catch her niece with her pants down and thus give her family another embarrassing story to regale her with? Find out with us after the break.
And we're back. Cassie whisks the pregnancy test away because they're not supposed to have markers in the house. Kate pulls up her pants, good job, and then tries to stop her. And I'm guessing, based on Cassie's mom, that this is probably the most attention she's gotten in a long time. So that turns this into a real, real fun game of keep away. Cassie runs out of the house and straight into the jump. Kate's close behind, but she stops short when she's confronted with her inflatable trauma. Kate stops at the mouth of the bouncy house, which is full of screaming, rambunctious kids and balls. Kat begs for Cassie to come out, but she's at the very back taunting, nah, come and get it. Kate tentatively gets in and all the kids join in on the keep away game. Things escalate and she full on gets assaulted by the brood. She's under a pile of kids when her family's still guffawing over the funny pictures. See her out the window and Courtney says, look, Auntie Kate's playing with Cassie. She's never done that before. They don't realize that Kate's waving for help, screaming, mistletoe! Mistletoe! Right before she gets bounced out of the jump. Kate decides enough is enough. She steals her resolve, gets back inside the bouncy house, zips the entrance, and tells the kids menacingly, I came here looking for a marker, and I'm not leaving without that marker.
Yeah.
One by one, the kids try attacking her, but Kate has no more fucks to give. She easily tosses one kid after another aside. She sees Cassie in the back, who puts the marker in her mouth and begins climbing the side of the bouncy house. And Kate loudly yells, Cassie, that marker in your mouth? I peed on it. The whole bouncy house gets deathly quiet, and Cassie spits the stick out disgustedly right into Kate's hand. And Cassie, you're probably going to join the family legacy of a nasty nickname by your peers after this.
Oh, Cassie, you kind of deserve it, though. Oh, Cassie.
What would her name be? Cassie Peepee?
No.
Kissy? Pissy? Pissy Cassie?
No.
I'll workshop it.
I would just go bodily function related and I would call her Cassie Passy Gassy.
Oh, see, you're too good at that, Corinne. You are. Wait, that just came to you too quick.
And I feel like a terrible human being for saying that about a child. I am not interested in calling her that. I take it back. I take it all back.
It just rolled off your tongue so easily, though. My God.
Ugh.
It's like you have a gift.
I don't want that kind of a gift. I don't need that kind of a gift. I don't want to be an asshole. And these children were possessed by Damien, I swear, because all of them were horrible to Kate. It was kind of incredible.
They were drop kicking her and slamming her face against the bottom of the jump. And I was like, oh, hell no. I was even watching that getting mad. I'm like, I'm just like, let me at him.
Yeah. Kate takes the stick, checks it quickly, and goes back inside. She puts her clean dress on and is met outside the bathroom by Brad, who teases her about her baby photos. Oh, Brad, you're such a mensch. Which made her look like a twin who ate her sibling in the womb. Which is, he adds as some sort of compensation, why she's so powerful. Huh. Yeah, that... Let's give me some more backward compliments, please. Thank you.
Mm.
But he also assures her that he still loves her, even though she was an abnormally large child with lesbian tendencies. Seriously, Brad, you are so funny. Oh, my God, you baby man. But don't worry, gentle listeners. He gets even worse. Just keep those pants on. Oof. Oh, Brad, he's a baby man. Kate, listen to me. He's a baby man. Which means he can't do anything. So, Kate protests that she wasn't a lesbian until Brad convinces her that she might not have been, but her friend Joe most likely was, and probably liked Kate as more than a friend. Kate chews on this while Brad points out, "See, we all have skeletons in our closet, and you shouldn't have been so shitty to me about the whole Orlando thing." Kate agrees, and they head out to their mom's church for afternoon service. It's held at one of those mega churches with lights, sound system, booming stadium music, and Pastor Phil, who's played by Dwight Yoakam. After a boisterous introduction, "Doctor Who, hey, Doctor Who," Pastor Phil comes out, "ba ba ba ba." But he somberly announces, "Unfortunately, our Mary and Joseph for the Nativity got food poisoning. Can we have a couple of volunteers?" After a long silence, Marilyn nominates Kate, even though her daughter protests due to her paralyzing stage fright. Pastor Phil exclaims, "Hallelujah! Praise the Lord! Now, who will be our Joseph?" Kate hisses at Brad Lando, "Come on, be Joseph! I don't want to go up there by myself." And so Brad, being a supportive partner, says, "Yes, I will be there for you. I will go up on stage with you."
No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. He's a baby man. He's a baby man because he can't do anything. And so he doesn't budge until Pastor Phil calls him out. "Brad, rum pum 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 pum. I choose you with my drum. You are part of the divine and shall play Joseph."
Oh, see what happens? See what happens to Corinne when there's not any singing written into the script? She has to inject it anywhere she can.
Hey, he said rum pum pum.
Uh-huh. And you just made it more melodic. And then there was a whole
That's because it's part man. Of the... It's, well, the baby man thing is different. But the rum-pum-pum is what the little drummer boy does on his
I was just saying, because at that one little place, you're like, singing, and then singing this, and then I'm singing this too, and then I'm singing this.
Okay, Tamara, how many times have I told you, had to explain to you, that I am trying to actualize my life into a musical?
No, I know that. I'm just telling our gentle listeners that may not stop by all that often that this is your way. This is quintessential Corinne. Like, can I possibly turn this sentence into a song? Let me try.
It's also my way, like when Tamara and I are like on a road trip together or going to Target together or yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the reluctant couple goes backstage, are given costumes, scripts. Kate is given yet another baby, winds up the church uses a 3-month-old named Bernard instead of a doll for baby Jesus, and Kate is panicking. She looks to Brad for support, but he's a baby man. He's too self-involved with his lines and how he should say them. It winds up that Brad has found his inner ham in acting, and not like the delicious kind that you have for Easter. No, the annoying kind that acts like they're funny, but they actually aren't. And the thunderous applause is like catnip to him. Eventually, Pastor Phil narrates the nativity scene on stage, and when he calls for Joseph, Brad, and Mary Kate, Olsen, that is. The nativity scene is very period accurate, with green and yellow neon striping along with a yellow neon star at its center, just like Joseph and Mary had back in the day.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Brad is soaking up the attention while Kate looks like she wants to disappear. Phil tells the congregation, "Mary takes the swaddling cloth and swaddles the baby Jesus." Kate looks around the nativity scene frantically, but sees no swaddling cloth. She hisses at Brad, help me find the swaddling cloth, but he is more interested in saving the performance. He boisterously says his lines and Mary's lines. Crowd is eating it up, and Kate finally realizes that the swaddling cloth is hanging from Brad's belt. Womp, 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 womp. She tells him, and instead of him passing it to her so she can swaddle the baby, he throws her under the motherfucking bus, calls her an unfit mother, and says, "I'll swaddle the baby myself," but really just kind of loosely wraps the blanket around him. God did not divinely instruct him on how to swaddle before placing the baby in the manger and thrusting his hands into the air and gyrating to the celebratory music that's playing. They exit the stage to hallelujahs and high fives, on Brad's part at least, and Kate is full of all kinds of what the fuck just happened. They don't come out of their second Christmas completely unscathed, and fuck that shit. This is when I'd be parting ways with Brad. You know why I'd be parting ways with Brad?
Could it be the fat shaming, the lesbian shaming, the fact that he didn't help you with your dress when you got puked on? Is any of those things, or is there more?
Because he's a baby man. He's a baby man.
And now we are at house 3, which I call the hippie house, and another cougar. A little later, and is it still the same day? Like, fucking, how is that possible if they're driving anywhere in or near the Bay Area with traffic?
I think all of them magically live in Marin County area.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, okay, so this is Brad's mom's house? And if she was indeed a cashier, as he said, like, that was a fucking career, because his house is ginormous and gorgeous. And I'm like, can I get one of those, please? Thank you.
Oh, and they've been together for 3 years, never met each other's family.
Yeah. Oh, I know, because they've been in Fiji and Puerto Rico and all those other places for the holidays. Even they live so far, Corinne. They live across the Golden Gate Bridge, and we know how they feel about driving across that Golden Gate Bridge. Mm-hmm. They don't do it unless absolutely necessary, or when they're going to the airport that's on the same side.
The Golden Gate Bridge is just a bridge too far.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, Brad and Kate are back in the car going to their next Christmas. Brad is basking in the glow of his performance, and Kate is pissed that she got thrown under the bus. They have a heated argument because Kate thinks he doesn't have her back, and they haven't been connecting the whole day.
Why would she think that? Would she possibly think that he doesn't have her back?
Because he called Mary, mother of Jesus, an unfit mother during a performance because she didn't have the swaddle that was attached to his belt. And oh Lord, there's that's just one of the reasons. That's the most recent reason, but I have many. But I'm not gonna go into it anyways. Brad thinks her anger is misdirected at him instead of her family, even though Kate assures him that her familial anger has been firmly planted in the same place since adolescence. Thank you very much. When they arrive at Brad's mother's house, they're still going at it when his mom, Paula, played by Sissy Spacek, answers the door. But things seem to be different here. Paula's warm and inviting to both Brad and Kate. She invites them into her beautiful home that she cannot possibly afford on a cashier's salary and explains to Kate, since this is the first time they're meeting in person, that she and Brad are so close because he lived with her after the divorce, while Denver and Dallas are more comfortable with their dad. She says good-naturedly, "Hell, I breastfed him until he was 5. I didn't have anyone on my tits more than a professor I was seeing right after his father." Brad is mortified, and the hits, along with the word tits, keep coming as a man about Brad's age bounds into the room saying, "Hey, kids!" Paula introduces him to Kate. His name is Daryl, and he's Paula's lover. Brad looks like he wants to crawl out of his skin as Daryl kisses his mom deeply, sits next to her, and explains, "Look, Brad, I'm not trying to be your father. You already have one of those. I just want a chance to be your friend." Brad responds bitterly. We were friends, Darrow. We were best friends. We grew up together. We rode bikes together. We smelled each other's hands. But now you're sleeping with my mom, and it's a little weird for me. Can you appreciate that? Darrow explains that he didn't have a sexual thought about Paula until he was 30, and that she's a vibrant sexual being. Ooh. Brad begs his friend to stop. And Paula smartly switches gears and says, Kate was good enough to send us some board games to play with, so we're going to go gather around the table and have a lot of fun. I also have to say, too, that this, incidentally, if they all are in Marin County or the Bay Area, have some of the most Southern accents in a lot of these households. Because Dwight Yoakam, Southern accent. Uh-huh. Susan, Southern accent.
Yeah.
I've never met so many Southern people north of San Francisco.
It's probably where I get my Southern accent from.
That's what it is. See, you're in Oakland, and that's Southern accent adjacent, so mm-hmm. You're good. That's exactly where your origins for your accent come from, Corinne.
Yes.
That and your imagination.
So, there's a lot of Southern accents going on in this. And I got to say, Tam, if my mom ever died and you were footloose and fancy free and you decided to connect with my dad romantically. I love the look on Tamara's face right now.
Your dad that we just discussed in length that had two hips replaced and a pacemaker installed. Is that the dad you're talking about?
Yes, that's the dad I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
Don't worry. He's got plenty of life left in him.
And he has four pressure cookers. Did I mention that?
Yes, he does. Under pressure. Yes. And a house. Huh?
Oh, my God. Finish your sentence, please. I just want this to be over.
I would have to come to terms with a lot of things, as I'm sure you would if you were in the situation that I put you in, hypothetically speaking. But, like, we could still be friends. However, if you were like, hey, kid, to me, and, you know, was like, let me get out my purse and give you a little, like, travel change, you know, I'd just be like, and fuck you.
Yeah. That's the part I did cut out of that scene, because he's like, hey, thanks for coming down. I'd like to get your gas money. Can I get your gas money? And Brad's like, I make fucking more money than you, asshole. I'm good.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not trying to be your dad or anything, but I just want to see how you kids are doing. And it's like, no. It's one thing to be making out with the mom. It's another thing to be trying to be parental.
Yeah, that was weird. And he seemed to be getting a fucking kick out of it, man. Oh. He was just like, hey, this give me as much jollies as kissing your mom.
But don't you worry, Tam. My dad's got several pressure cookers.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it right now. Stop it.
Two.
God damn it.
She now has so fidgets in her head that she never wanted.
Oh.
Cut to everyone gathered around the dining room table, including Susan and Dallas. Dallas, who's gnawing on a pile of hot wings, glaring intently at his brother. They're all gathered there to play Taboo. Taboo! One of Tamara's signature games.
The only reason why it's a Tamara signature game is because me and my sister always kicked ass playing Taboo. And the premise of Taboo is very simple. You have a partner. You have one word that you're trying to get your partner to say, but you can't say the words underneath. So, for example, if I'm trying to get Corinne to say ketchup, I can't say condiment, mayo, catsup, tomato. Like, there's a myriad
red.
Of words I can't say.
Yeah.
Red. But I have to try to get her to say ketchup using clues other than the quote-unquote taboo words.
Yes. And if she says one of those taboo words, meh, the buzzer gets buzzed onto the next thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Me and my sister kicked ass at this game. I think our record was like 19 or something in a row.
And I feel like you are very much along the late lines of Susan and Dallas in
yes
playing this
yes
game.
Except for the one time might have mentioned it on this podcast because it still burns me, is that we were talking, the word was comb. I had to get my sister to say comb. And I was like, oh my God, yes. I'm like, Dad had one of this in his back pocket almost all our lives. And she's like, wallet. And I'm like, no. Dad had one of this in his back pocket almost. And I like kept saying that. And I was like, Dad. And she was like, what? What are you talking about? What? And I was like, I can't believe you don't know this. Like, we've sick. 27 years, Dad's always had a black comb in his pocket. Sometimes it was brown. Most of the time it was black. He'd always get his hair wet and comb his hair every time he went to the bathroom. And she did not pick up what I was putting down. And when I finally told her, I almost slapped her forehead and she slapped her forehead because she was like, I cannot believe that I did not get that. And I was like, I know, me neither. I don't want to play with you anymore.
We're done here. And I don't even know if we're sisters anymore.
Yes, I'm disowning you. Overcomb.
I'm leaving you for a man that has four pressure cookers. Four.
Shut up. Shut up. I hate you so much right now.
So, gentle listeners, my dad is very happily married to my mom, and neither Tamara or I can think of him in a, like, hey, sexy kind of way. No, he's dad. He's Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you are trying really hard. It's making me very uncomfortable.
So, back to taboo. Paula and Daryl go first. They get their first word easily, but the second word gives them a little trouble. Paula says, it's what you dripped on me the other day. Daryl smiles and says, ooh, wax. Paula clarifies, no, the brown stuff. Daryl tries again. Oh, chocolate. Paula says, no, before that. He finally correctly guesses, syrup. And then he says, very sticky, do not recommend. But their time is up. They got a whopping 2 points. Next, it's Dallas and Susan, and they machine gun fire through 7 points with clues like, Susan, capital of China. Dallas, Hong Kong. Susan, yes, I helped you come up with this when you were drunk and you came home late from the bar on Saturday. Dallas, alibi. Susan, Mexican dude. Dallas, Ricardo Montalban. Susan, yes, the only man I'm allowed to cheat on you with. Dallas, John Grisham. Susan, what I'm not allowed to wear at Supercross. Dallas, miniskirt. Susan, you and me dry humping on a beach. Dallas, screensaver. At the end of their turn, they high-five and kiss passionately. Kate asks, oh my God, how many was that? She's in awe, as we all are. And Suzalis say, 7 in unison. Susan is the highlight of this entire movie. I give her the Oscar. Then it's Kate and Brad's turn, and he is not picking up what she's putting down. Kate says,
much like my sister in the comb.
Uh-huh. It's what I'm most afraid of. And he incorrectly guesses snakes, jumps, 4-year-olds. Kate is incredulous and tells him spiders. She tries shaking it off and moving on to the next clue. She gives an over-involved story about her most embarrassing moment in a bikini. She's attempting to get him to say peekaboo. Okay, but he doesn't know it and is now frustrated that she's not trying alternate clues. Brad, like game you would play with a baby. Brad gives her examples that she could have used while mom, not thoroughly clear on the rules of the game, keeps boisterously buzzing him for saying taboo words, even though he's not the clue giver. No, he's just mansplaining / shaming her because he's a baby man. He's a baby man.
I mean, I would have been explaining to her too. She's like, it was that one time in Cabo San Lucas and I had just lost a lot of weight. And then I went into the bar with my friends and then something like peeked out. And then the bartenders all called me and I'm like, seriously? Like, that's no. If you have to explain with more than 2 sentences, move on. I'm a very serious taboo player though, so I might be a little partial.
But you wouldn't do it while the timer is running on your game. Shame the person who's giving the clues because you want to go through other cards.
Yeah. But he was like, obviously, they just at this moment in time realize that they don't know each other very well and obviously cannot play competitive board games. That's all I'm saying.
We need to take Larry out on a taboo run. See how well that goes.
He doesn't play games with me anymore because I royally spanked him in Words with Friends. So he doesn't want to play that with me anymore. So then we bought a dominoes set because he's like, oh, I can play dominoes really good. You want to play dominoes? I'm like, fuck yeah, I'll play dominoes with you. And then I owned him a domino, so he doesn't want to play that with me anymore.
He pulls out a Monopoly board. You're like, no!
I'm like, oh, you don't want to fuck with me on Monopoly. You really don't. You really don't.
After another disastrous attempt, their time is up, and all the couples look a bit embarrassed by Kate and Brad Lando's poor performance. Brad gives Kate serious attitude and states that he is shutting down. He's like, I'm shutting down. He's a baby man. And Kate is starting to realize that maybe they don't know that much about each other. There are severe cracks in their relationship after the third Christmas.
And for the fourth time, Brad and Kate are back in the car. Kate states seriously, there's something I want to talk to you about. Brad thinks he knows and tells her, no apologies needed. Just next time when we're playing board games, you have to be more literal and less conceptual. Kate shakes her head. No, Brad. I took a pregnancy test today at my mom's house. It was just sitting there and I was a few days late. Brad accuses, did you pull the goalie? You can't pull the goalie without talking to your teammate. Kate assures him that she did not pull the goalie and that's not what this conversation's about. The test was negative.
I have no idea what that means.
What?
Do you have any idea what that means?
What?
Did you pull the goalie? You can't pull the goalie without talking to your teammate.
Oh, stop. When you stop taking your birth control without talking to the other person about having a baby.
Oh. Oh, yeah. No, that's not cool. That's not consensual mm-hmm. at all. I wouldn't yeah. call it pulling the goalie, but yeah. Okay. I got
He's
you
a baby
now.
Man, Corinne. Remember, he's a baby man.
Oh, right.
These are
okay.
the words that he knows how to use. Baby
Thank
man.
You. I wrote a song about him. Got it. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yep. Refer to the song that you just sang us 10 seconds ago.
What was I thinking?
The test was negative, and he's very upset by that and says, why didn't you lead with that instead of having me take laps around the anxiety pool? Listen, if there's one thing we learned about being around our families, it's that we should not be procreating. Kate is disappointed by his reaction and explains, I thought for sure I'd never want kids, but when I took this test and was waiting for a second, I felt different. I felt hopeful that maybe if it just happened, we'd be forced to deal with all of our fears. Because for the entirety of our relationship, we've always been putting up boundaries and making sure we're not limiting ourselves with responsibility and obligation. And I don't want to live like that because that's not loving at all. I'm tired of being one foot in. I want us to be loving and open. And if that means one day we get married and have kids, I want that to be okay. I want the relationship to go where it needs to go. Brad's face has been growing more and more sour as she talks. And he says tersely, well, I want this relationship to go to Fiji. Kate cuts him off. Brad, this is important. I want to have this conversation. But Brad doesn't and says, I felt the same way I have since the beginning. I don't want to have a conversation about it because I don't want those things. Kate relents and quietly says, okay. And when they get to her dad's house, she tells him he doesn't have to come in. Brad assures her that he's not letting her go in alone, but she declines, saying, I don't want to pretend that we're something that we're not. Brad pleads for her not to overreact, but she's done. She gets out of the car and says flatly, I'm not overreacting. I get that I'm the one changing the rules. If you don't want to change them with me, I understand, but I can't do this anymore. And quietly closes the door. He looks like he wants to say something, but doesn't, and instead drives away.
It's an interesting spot to be in, Brad. Brad Lando. Brad Lando Riva. But first we have to address house number 4, which is controversially titled by Tamara, the Republicans, because I said to her, first house, Republicans, second house, Republicans, third house, not Republicans, fourth house, maybe Republicans. So this house is the Republicans.
And I said, they're hardly there at all. So if you can come up with a better word for the household that she's in, go right at it. Go ahead.
Bougie, politically questionable house.
Yes.
Kate's dad, Creighton, is that how it's pronounced?
I have no idea. I think I think they say it once in the scene, and that I had to look it up on IMDb, and that's how it's spelled.
Oh, okay.
So I'm guessing it's Creighton or Creighton. Creighton, okay. Probably. Creighton, yeah.
Great. Creighton, played by John Voight, sees them pulling up and comes out to meet his daughter. Inside, Kate is almost knocked over by Cassie, who excitedly hugs her aunt and drags her to come see the toys she got. Because he is not like Mom, who's like, slash Grandma, who's like, this year we're not doing presents. Instead, we're just being present for each other.
That's a crock of shit, Grandma.
Uh-huh. Like, if there's a child there, at least have some kind of a token gift or something. You know, a cute Bible with her name inscribed in it. No, I'm just kidding.
That's also, we cut it out because of time, but even if you don't get her any presents and you're talking about the spirituality that you're going to share, don't say, my gift is going to be pleasuring my husband with my help, my mouth and my hand more often in front of an 8-year-old.
No, we no.
Because that's
not
what,
appropriate.
That's what the Graham said.
Yes.
Graham said that.
Graham did. Graham also tried to get Brad Lando Necky in the foyer of the household. So, yeah. Cassie excitedly drags her aunt to a pile of presents. And while Kate is oohing and aahing over them, Courtney comes upon them and she asks, where's Brad? Courtney knows by her sister's expression that something has happened. She sends her daughter away to thank everyone for the presents. And once she's out of earshot, Kate remarks, I can't believe Mom and Dad are getting along. They used to hate each other. In the next room, Marilyn and Pastor Phil are having eggnog with Creighton and his girlfriend Cheryl. Well, Courtney explains, they've been getting together since Cassie turned one. Kate admires the scene and remarks, it must be nice for Cassie. And Courtney nudges her playfully and says, it's nice for all of us. She asks again where Brad is and Kate informs her, he's not going to make it. And I don't want to talk about it. Courtney sweetly says, Mom's the word. No one will ask you about it. But then adds, after a long pause, maybe you should try online dating. Kate flippantly says, I'll think about it. And retreats to another room for a bit. Her father, who witnesses the sisters' interaction, follows her and stands in the doorway asking, did Brad get a jump start inoculating babies in Burma? Or maybe he's making sock puppets for foster kids or weaving ponchos for pregnant ladies in the Yucatan? Kate chuckles because Pop is making it obvious that he's been on to them for a while. She asks, how long have you known? Creighton admits, it's been a while because I've had a lot of experience lying to stay away from my family. As we all know, you can't say families without lies. But he's chosen a different route now. He sits next to her and says, it's taken me a long time to learn that nothing beats being honest about who you are or what you want. Everything else seems to fall into place. Kate admits, I was honest, and I think he was too, but it wasn't what I wanted to hear. Dad nods knowingly and takes her hand. Next, we see Kate and her family in the dining room around a bunch of delicious holiday food. And Creighton gives a lovely speech about not believing that these people would ever be around the same table at the same time. But he knows now the family is what's most important. Or as we say in my family, chocolate. We all know what's important. Chocolate.
Meanwhile, Brad is driven back to his dad's house. He knocks on the door and a voice from the side porch yells, what the hell do you want? Did you forget your tampons?
Ugh,
Brad
fucker.
Answers, I just came by to see you. This doesn't soften his father and he adds, you already destroyed my living room and TV. You want to bash up my kitchen now? Brad tries apologizing, but Dad doesn't let him. He cuts him off asking, where's Tiny? Brad says that she's not coming and they might be over. Dad wonders if it's because she finally smelled the pathetic on him.
Wow.
And Brad informs him that it's quite the contrary, that she actually wanted a future and a marriage with him. Howard gives him a half-assed congratulations, but Brad informs him that he turned her down. This causes Howard's demeanor to change, and he chuckles while muttering, huh, hell, it's always the ones you fight with the most that are the most like you. This information thaws his icy demeanor and he shakes his son's hand and invites him in for a drink. Then we get a montage of Kate at her dad's and Brad at his. They're both alone, drinking in their sadness and the memories that surround them. Later in the evening at the Republican house, because that's what I'm calling it and I'm sticking to it, the doorbell rings. Kate answers it and it's Brad? She greets him coolly, and he gushes enthusiastically. If you get one, you might as well get two, because they're like dogs. If you have two, then they can play and keep each other company. Kate deadpans, what are you talking about? And he clarifies, kids! And what about schools? Do we send them to private, where we have a sweater vest and lacrosse thrown at us constantly? Or do we go public, where they might get shanked by a disgruntled art student? That would be really uncomfortable. Kate asks, are you having this conversation because you're comfortable having it, or do you just want to go to Fiji? He admits, I want to go to Fiji, but I am comfortable because in my heart, I know I found the person I want to have these conversations with. Hmm. Kate's thrilled, and they kiss and then agree that just because they're talking about it doesn't mean they have to rush out and have kids right away or even get married right away. Then they both excitedly spout off the advantages kids can have, like their tax shelters. We'll save so much money on yard work and they'll totally take care of us when we're old.
Uh-huh. Sure.
I guess we're both screwed, Corinne, in that avenue.
I know. I forgot to procreate, and therefore I am all by myself. Don't have no children to take care of me. Oof. Sadness. The couple survived the four Christmases, and next we see the words, 1 year later. So even though they said they weren't in a rush, Kate is holding a newborn girl in her arms, and Brad is marveling at what a trooper Kate was and how everything happened so quickly. He jokes, I felt like an air traffic controller, and things were just flying all around me. The nurse comes in and tells the couple that they're allowed to invite family in now to meet the baby. They both sharply say, nope. The nurse is surprised. You don't want your family to know you had a baby? Brad explains, well, they might be a little surprised even to know Kate was pregnant. Kate adds as an explanation, our families could be a little much. Outside their hospital, a local San Francisco news station is live on the site to report on the Bay Area's first baby New Year. The reporter rushes in with lights and a camera crew and shoves the mic in an unsuspecting Brad's face, asking, McAfee family, what's it like having the first baby of the new year? Brad mutters, we're doing great, and there was a vacuum and then stretchy and juices. Kate jumps in again to save his pathetic news performance, saying, we're just over the moon and thankful. But she doesn't get to finish because the baby projectile vomits all over Kate and Brad, which causes him to retch and dry heave for all the Bay Area and most likely their families to see, because he's a baby man. Sing it with me. He's a baby man. Because he can't do anything. The end.
The one bone of contention I have with that last scene is there's a live news report going on and a lady just had a baby and you're going to barge into her hospital room like with no knocks or introductions and just be like, you might be getting examined by your OBGYN and we walk in on you. You might be breastfeeding and we walk in on you. Cameras ready and mics held out. That just does not sit right with me.
Oh, and fuck HIPAA. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, your name is the McVee family and you just had a baby. Can we give you also your social security number and address on live air right now? What do you say?
So people can send gifts. People can send gifts.
Right. Yeah.
So, Miss Tamara, how many dry kisses do you give for Christmases?
Oh, this movie is awful and I still love it. There has got to be a reason why Vince Vaughn plays the same character in every fucking movie and he is still so beloved and almost always gets the girl, except for the breakup. I think that's the one where it's questionable anyways, but I've not seen it in a while. And so now, like,
well has this movie aged, Tam?
No, it hasn't aged well. With a critical eye, I realize that it's problematic. And although I'm like, they are portraying very fucked up families and I would not like to be part of any of them, thank you very much, I still enjoy it. It still has its moments. I still like the premise of having to go to four family Christmases when you don't want to and then realizing that you are fucked and you don't really know each other that well. So I'm going to say it's a good solid 3 dry kiss movie for me. And by the way, I also have a question for you, Corinne. If you had to spend one Christmas at any of these families' houses, where would you go?
Oh, easy.
Gun to your head.
House number 4. No problem. Done.
The Republicans?
Yeah, that house was the house where Kate was acknowledged by her family, was not ignored. She had a heart-to-heart conversation with her dad. She had a nice interaction with her sister, and they all had a good meal together. Is the that only is place true, 'cause... where anything positive happened.
And it also seemed like once they crossed Creighton's, as you so amply named yes. it, threshold of his like front door, like Courtney and Cassie turned into decent human beings. Yes. Like they morphed into like out of the horrendous people that they were earlier in the movie to just like sweet, gracious, caring family members, yeah. which was jarring.
So that is why maybe it's because they were in a different environment outside of the Cougar House.
Mm. I also do enjoy, I'd have a secret soft spot in my heart of movies that are in or around places that I've lived. So this is San Francisco, and I was born in San Francisco, and I grew up for many, many years in the Bay Area, a mere 40 minutes south of San Francisco, in a neighborhood with a girl next door that you may have heard of named Corinne. So also love that aspect, because then you're like, oh, that's blubbity blah. That's not where that goes. That's blubbity blah. That's not entirely accurate how that happened. So diversity sucks. Problematic yes. as fuck. I still enjoyed it, and I still like the premise. And I did like Reese Witherspoon and Vince Vaughn in the movie together. Although even when I watched this the first time around, I'm like, oh, you are so getting a divorce eventually. It's not going to happen. You guys aren't going to last. I can tell you now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Corinne, how many dry kisses did you give for Christmases? I can tell this is going to be high. I can feel it. It's going to be up there.
Yeah. It's by up there, you mean the inverse, as in not there at all. So this gets an amazing one dry kiss. This kiss goes out to Reese Witherspoon and Katie Mixon, my heroes in the movie. Although Reese Witherspoon, we still need to have the he's a baby man intervention. Because
see, did I tell you about her injecting music anywhere she can? And
oh man, so bad. But yeah, Katie Mixon was the highlight of this movie for me. She was solid. She was good. She was fantastic. I liked her and Denver as a couple. Did not like anyone else as a couple. And I grew more sympathetic to Kate throughout the movie. And yeah, Brad's just a baby man. He's an asshole. He doesn't change. And they prove that he doesn't change when he gets vomited on by the baby. And he's just like freaking out instead of taking care of business. So yeah. Mm. That was not a cute look. And so this movie gets one dry kiss because it had people being beat up in it for no reason, verbal abuse, non-consensual touching. I mean, it had a lot not going for it. And actually, Christmas with the Cranks, that got 1.5 dry kisses.
Wow.
Because
banger. Two bangers in a row for Tamara.
Because that half a dry kiss, it had an actually solidly sweet sentimental ending. Also,
but
wanted
this
to...
one has a star-studded cast, Corinne. Like every single person in it. I'm like, oh, I like that person and that yeah. person and that person. That's just Sissy Spacek. Like, are you kidding me? So
and
John
everyone
Favreau,
does a great
fan.
Job. I will, yeah. You know. And I feel like for Christmas in the Cranks, I felt like people were there for the paycheck. And for this movie, I actually felt like it was solid in a movie kind of way that people were there because they thought, oh, this might be interesting.
Yeah. I also want Mary Steenburgen to be my mom. She's yeah. my second.
She can just sit and read me bedtime stories any old day because I love her voice.
Diane Weist. She's going to be my mom or Mary Steenburgen.
Yeah. Good choices. I appreciate, I like your choices. Yeah. So, this movie did not age well.
And it's not for the faint of heart. Just as a disclaimer, I give it 3 dry kisses unless you don't want to see any of the nastiness that does go on. Bounces right off of me like oil on a hot pan. But If you're more like-minded to Corinne, then you might want to skip it.
Yeah, but I think it was an excellent choice for our theme. And
because there was four Christmases, not just one, not two, not three, but four. That completely fulfilled the criteria of being a Christmas movie.
Yes, and fully makes up for our two Christmas-adjacent movies that we have done previously. So thank you for that service. And Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we're doing A Vineyard Christmas. And we got asked to cover this movie by
the person who wrote the movie, Katie Wilbert. And so we should be actually releasing an interview with her as bonus content later.
Yay! That's going to be exciting. We're actually going to be able to talk to the person that made the movie that we're covering. Good times. Good times.
Yes. And this movie is diverse and it talks about different holiday traditions. And also, we bring it all back around to OG, ODK territory with ice wine.
What?
Yes.
There's ice? I might have to get some ice wine for the occasion. I just might have to do it.
There is ice wine in this movie. So if you have anything that you would like to say about not one, not two, not three, but four Christmases, or if you don't think that Vince Vaughn in this movie, Brad Lando, is a baby man, he's a baby man, if you think that's undeserved, you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us via Instagram, Twitter, X, or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us, greatly appreciated. It'd be a Christmas gift to the both of us.
Aww.
And we would love you forever, or at least till the next year. But for a long time. We appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by. And we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time.
Merry Christmas.
Chugga, 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 chugga.
Oh my God. It sucks. The longer we do this, the more I feel like I repeat my stories. And I'm like, I really need new stories.
Oh, we're going to go on some adventures together. We'll create new stories hand in hand, arm in arm, luscious hair to luscious hair.
Luscious hair to luscious hair, and then we'll record on them, and then they'll get five times more listens than anything else. Yeah.